back alive. Why an income tax cut is in the budget again. Armed guards in every school. Will Indiana lead the nation? Mass transit derailed, a Medicaid maneuver, and the House Speaker on the disabled list. That plus Kevin Ware and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 5,
2013. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, a cut in the state income tax was placed back on the table in the General Assembly. Mike Pence wants a 10% cut in the state income tax. The Senate version of the budget now includes a 3% cut. The GOP governor immediately sent the message that he and lawmakers are coming together on a workable budget that includes tax relief. The cut was voted on and passed in this state Senate committee. It reduces the income tax by just 0.1%, enough for the governor to say that he's encouraged but not satisfied. Democrats are opposed.
I am very pleased to see permanent income tax relief included in this latest version of the budget.
To have this reduction from 3.4 to 3.3% is just it's just wrong.
That's Democrat Lyndall Hume. Is a 3% tax cut worth the trouble? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, this means about $50 to somebody who makes $50,000. Is that worth it?
No, it's not worth it. And all it is a sop to the governor so that he can have his political, checkoff list that I've cut taxes. I mean, they've already cut taxes on banks. They already phased out the inheritance tax faster. I mean, this is just the standard operating procedure for Republicans who don't think. And I put Mike Pence in that category. The roads are crumbling around us. There aren't enough revenue to fill those chuck holes, much less to repave them. Our schools are crying for money. Infrastructure needs it, and instead you're going to get, what, 5 Big Macs. Wow, what a big tax relief that is.
It's an interesting strategic move. It's back in the budget. The governor has the opportunity to negotiate for something bigger. Do you get the sense lawmakers are willing to entertain a bigger income tax cut?
Well, it's possible. First of all, it's a good budget. It addresses almost everything. Interestingly enough, that was on Ann's list, including transportation, education, a variety of other things. But there's almost $600 million worth of tax cuts in this budget, and that's significant. But what's significant about
four different tax cuts, the financial institutions tax,
inheritance
the corporate
tax,
the inheritance tax, and then altogether they add up to about $500 million, which is about the 10%.
The Democrats in the committee argued that it was closer to $600 million.
Okay. But it's equal to what the governor wants in a single tax cut.
Right. But what's significant here is the fact that it's in there. Because always before we were talking about we're going to wait and see what happens with the revenue forecast. Now that's no longer the consideration. It's in there, so it's part of the negotiation as we go into the final weeks of this session. And now, if you get a good revenue forecast, obviously, we still have time to increase that more if it's an outstanding revenue forecast. But if the revenue forecast is pretty dismal, then this thing will be off the table. But if it's where we think it's going to be, then it'll probably end up about where it is now. But the significance here is that Dr. Hicks at Ball State indicates that he thinks that, cuts for businesses, corporate taxes, will get into the economy quicker than the individual income tax will. That's the argument that he makes on this. But it's a good budget, a solid budget, and it protects our AAA bond rating, and it's probably the best budget I've seen around here in 20, 30 years.
Meantime.
Oh, better than Mitch's?
Not really, it is. It's well-crafted.
But it represents legislators' priorities, not the governor's priority.
I think that's true. But at the same time, because, Mike, I know you're shaking your head, but it does put more money in the schools than he had indicated, and it's not as much attached to performance as he has suggested. And transportation, it has money that goes directly to it, more than sort of the fund that he, his much of his transportation proposal was based on the notion that if revenues reached a certain point, then we could fill that bucket with additional overflow dollars. So there are some slightly different priorities, but I think what it is it's Mike Pence should maybe like what he sees here, because it is a good face-saving measure. If out of the House we had seen a budget crafted by a chamber that has a supermajority of his own party and didn't have, which we did see,
right,
and didn't have his any tax right cut in it, if you have then the Senate, which is also a supermajority controlled by his party, had done the same, that I think would have been a bit of an embarrassment.
What would have you been have a big here, story. Would have been a big
and
story.
And what you have here, though, is a situation where he can, because of whether it's 500 or 600 million, say that that's roughly the cut I wanted. I'm going to get that cut. And if it's 3%, sometimes the legislature gives you unanticipated gifts. Evan Bayh didn't want an auto excise tax cut.
Well, he did.
Well, but then,
once he figured out he couldn't stop it.
Once he figured out he couldn't stop, but initially he didn't, and then he campaigned on it. Mitch Daniels wanted a surtax on the wealthiest Hoosiers. When he first came into office, the legislature didn't want it, and then he campaigned that he never raised taxes.
Except he did
eventually
raise taxes.
Eventually, if this 3% goes through, I guarantee if he ever runs for president, which is I think he may, at some point he'll say, I cut taxes, just as you said, Ann. It's checking the box.
All right. How close is this to what we'll see as a final version of the budget?
Well, I think it's closer. And I do think that there's a real possibility now. I agree with Mike that the income tax could be a part of this. I still think that the forecast of the revenue will be important. But I think it'll be interesting, to see how this plays back home, because all of the taxes, the majority of the tax cuts, are not for regular Hoosiers. Regular Hoosiers will get some income tax relief, but the majority of that $500 million is being spent for inheritance tax, for
corporate tax,
and the bank tax. So I think they still have to convince Hoosiers that it's better to get $50 back than it is to invest, say, $100 or $200 or $300 million more.
$150 million is what the total is.
Well, it could be anything, but that right now is the figure is $150 million. Is it better to give back $50 a taxpayer or to spend that money on roads or to spend that money on education? That's going to be the interesting question.
Polling has shown that
people want it on education and they want it on roads.
Well, they have
understand
to,
that.
But they have to convince the legislature of that.
Well, the legislature doesn't care what the people want on this. They want political points. That's all they want. And what's interesting about it is the polling data does show that people want the money in education and roads. Yeah, they're putting money in education. We're almost getting back to where we were 4 years ago. Isn't that great? And it's ridiculous. They tried that give back. They took all the money. Then they're going to give it back to us, and it's going to stimulate the economy. Well, nothing happens.
The governor came up with a new argument to keep a lid on spending this week. He says that the state government shouldn't spend more than families are, so he's saying that the cost of living should be the limit. So that's his argument against spending more than 2% for schools,
There is serious consideration to make sure that we protect this AAA bond rating that we have.
Right.
And that all boils down to making sure you don't spend more than you take in, and that's the goal here. This is an honestly balanced budget.
Or don't give back more than you
it also
take
doesn't
in,
have,
which they're
it also,
already doing.
It also doesn't have the automatic taxpayer refund that the governor had in his.
Oh, what a shock.
Moving on. The prospect of teachers carrying guns won approval at the State House this week.
Indiana is already the only state in the country that requires a school resource officer to oversee safety in every school building. That officer can be armed under current law. The bill now in the Indiana House, however, mandates that someone in every school carry a gun. That would also be a first in the country. State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz emerged from a meeting of the State Board of Education to say she was surprised to learn of the mandate.
And I am for those types of decisions being made at the local level, at the school district level.
Governor Mike Pence also believes that guns in schools shouldn't be the result of local decision making. But what if every school district agrees to have armed guards?
That's something we'd be prepared to be supportive of.
In fact, the governor says that the price tag for proper training of gun-toting school officers is one the state should pay.
We'll find the resources to make sure that local schools have the funding that they need to provide the kind of security that is appropriate.
Mike McDaniel, is this an area where Indiana wants to be a leader?
What Indiana wants to do is what people are considering in almost every state, and that's make sure that children are safe when they go to school. President Pro Tem Long has already said that, you know, he'll block this mandate when it comes over to the Senate. The governor said it should be a local decision. Glenda Ritz agrees with that. So I'd be stunned if this thing got out of the legislative process with anything other than local decision-making.
Local option. And the, sure. And the reality is there are a number of school districts, especially in urban areas, that already have
armed guards.
Right.
Usually police officers that are non-duty police officers.
I mean, it's a poorly conceived idea. And what's interesting to me about this is the hypocrisy of this. You know, Republicans are supposed to be for the decision-making being made at the lowest possible level. And then Senator Long said, and they mandate. Senator Long is right on this, but Mike Pence said the same thing. Introduced this bill, and the other thing about this is we do not want to lead. I mean, if we want to do something for school safety, and I'm all for that, we should be requiring background checks, and we should limit the size of the magazines. That's what we should be doing if we're really concerned.
Which Connecticut did this week. This is the NRA position.
I think it's safe to say that this was drawn right out of their playbook and put right into legislation, and I think that's where certainly leadership is given pause. It doesn't make sense in a broad public policy statement to make that kind of requirement for all schools, because it is inconsistent with the philosophy of home rule. And I think that's where you're seeing leadership come down. And I think if they wanted to make it an option, and I'm sure that the big school districts that already have police forces would love to have additional state aid to help pay for that. So if that's what they want to do, then that's a completely different policy discussion than mandating everybody have somebody who's armed in every school.
$10 million in the Senate version of the budget that would go to help train school resource officers, they call them.
School protection officers, yeah. That's at least it wouldn't be an unfunded mandate, you know, which you often hear. It'd be a mandate, no doubt, that if this were enacted. But there would be some money in the Senate bill for it. And I think, though, keep in mind that even if before this provision was introduced this week, after the NRA came out with its stance, I think that $10 million would have been there for training and equipping
police officers without the mandate.
And so I'm not sure you can necessarily say that the Senate said, oh, we like this and we're going to put $10 million in there. But just one point about the home rule, that issue does not break as cleanly as leadership would suggest, because this week we also saw passage, and I don't want to get off the track, of a Republican-backed bill that would preclude local municipalities and counties from doing certain labor types of stipulations. So, I mean, this is an argument that you adopt when you don't like something, and you can, I mean, you know.
Right.
You mean that it's just a situational ethics kind of situation?
It won't happen as an option, right?
They need to stop kowtowing to the NRA, too, because, I mean, you know, if the NRA comes out with an idea that every third grader ought to be carrying when they go to school to protect themselves, are we going to okay that, too?
I think that's an interesting position, because the NRA has been very influential and had a lot of success in Indiana. And it'll be interesting to see just how far that reaches into the legislature. This is a test case for that.
I think Indiana's concealed carry law, you can be 18, right? So why not just allow high school students who are 18 who have concealed carry permits, you can cover many more entrances than one.
That's not even funny.
I know it's not funny. I'm just saying if the argument is you want more people in schools, well, there you go.
Back to reality. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should every school in Indiana have an armed guard? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it should be an option. Last week's question was, should hunting preserves be permitted in Indiana? 56% said no, it's animal cruelty. 39% said yes, it's economic development. 5% said hunting should be banned altogether. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Supporters of a bigger, better mass transit system in central Indiana are now planning for a legislative battle next year. That's because state lawmakers have blocked plans for an up or down vote this year. It means that efforts to sell the plan for more modern buses and the possibility of a light rail line will start over in 2014. A committee in the state Senate voted to send the matter to a summer study committee. The unanimous vote came after appeals from business leaders and local government officials.
I truly believe we have to invest not only in roads and streets and bridges, but also in transit.
We think this question should go to the voters. We think that the voters should decide in each county whether they want to make this investment in this system or not.
John Ketzenberger, what do supporters of mass transit have to do to get this passed?
They got to get the mayor and they got to get Senate Republicans on the same page.
The mayor says he still thinks it can get done this year, and yet he didn't show up to testify.
Exactly.
He believes in the Easter Bunny as well.
I think that the mayor's inability or desire not to, or whatever the reason was, to not be engaged on this did not do any good favors in the Senate. The Senate Republicans from Marion County, or have a piece of Marion County, are split very dramatically on this, and until they can come together, you're not going to get it done.
They're still pushing for it this year, though. They're making phone calls around the city trying to drum up support. It's over for this year.
I think so. And the fact that the vote to send it to summer study committee was unanimous, 12-0. I mean, if there had been maybe some suggestion of a fissure there were some aspect of support in the Senate. But that vote tells me that it's going nowhere this session.
It is not over. It will be back yet this session, and there will be more discussion about mass transit in central Indiana.
But will it pass?
No.
Okay.
Okay, there you go.
And so they'll be back next year. Right.
And it will be back again yet this session. And the mayor made that very clear today, or yesterday, whenever it was, he had a news conference on the subject, and that he supports that, and now's the time to do it, and he's right about that. And the reason he's right about that is it's going to get tougher to do this in an election year than it would have been in 2013. And they're going to study it. It'll go to study committee this summer. There'll be a lot of effort put into this. And one of the things that has to be done is to stop making it a moving target from the standpoint of changing what it is every couple
days.
You
got a light rail line or not?
Well, that's the kind of stuff that'll
figure out what you want.
This has been studied for 30 years. You know, we don't need another study commission. What this is all about is the hypocrisy. What we talked about before, all the decisions at the local level, except if we don't like the outcome. So you're not going to allow the people who are going to be taxed the opportunity to vote. The mayor used whatever political capital he had in this session to consolidate his own power. That's what he was interested in, not what was best for the citizens of Indianapolis.
So, he hasn't gotten that yet either.
Well, yeah. He's tried his best to try to get that done.
Well,
he isn't interested in pushing the mass transit, even
sure
though everybody
he is.
Here
well,
wants
for people who really are have been sincere, and I don't know which, if he's... He's been an advocate, and he did more this session certainly than
he had
in the past. Well, he did earlier, did he not, at committee?
Yes,
he testified at committee.
And where has he been every day?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure he has a day job. But the point is the frustration
quickly
for people who are behind it is the notion that has been studied. And we've had study committees.
Yeah.
It's been this
30
has been,
years.
And so that's,
this is a delay tactic.
Yes.
At best, it's
sure
a delay tactic.
Or a potential killing tactic.
Yes.
Well, but they could kill it if they wanted to.
It's still alive.
Actually, it's a keeping it alive tactic.
It's a delay tactic.
Moving on. A Republican state lawmaker is taking the lead in efforts to expand health insurance coverage in Indiana. Ed Clear of New Albany successfully amended a bill so that it requires the Pence administration to negotiate with the federal government over the expansion of health care. Clear is in a new role this year as chairman of the health committee in the Indiana House, and he's been pushing for the expansion of Medicaid since the beginning. That expansion would give health insurance to 400,000 people who currently don't have it. Governor Pence says he'll support support expansion only if it's done through the Healthy Indiana Plan and not Medicaid.
This is not a debate about the Affordable Care Act. Whether we like it or not, that debate has been settled. But I do support finding a way to use the expansion dollars to continue the sort of innovation that we've already proven we can do in Indiana and find a way to cover those folks.
John Schwanes, is Ed Clear spitting in the wind?
I don't think so. I mean, there may be a political breeze blowing against him, but there's probably also a wave of, say, 400,000 uninsured Hoosiers and $10 billion-plus federal dollars backing him, arguing that there is a reason to do this. I think ultimately what's going to happen here, I mean, what this bill, as he is amended, would do is if there, you know, you got to go compromise, you got to work this out. Yeah. And before it was a matter of, do you think that Medicaid's existing rules can be morphed into the Hoosier Healthy Indiana program? I think what we're going to see now is it's actually the other. You can still call it the Healthy Indiana Plan, but guess what? You're now going to have vision coverage. You're going to have mental health coverage. You're going to have no caps. So basically, call it what you will. We talked about face saving before. You may have a situation where the administration can say, we held firm. We wanted this to be Healthy Indiana program, and that's what it is, even though it's exactly what largely what Medicaid is going to mandate.
This requires the Pence administration to negotiate with the federal government, and the governor doesn't like it, and Senator Long doesn't like it, and they suggested that Ed Clear's freelancing.
Well, Ed Clear may be freelancing, but I think that he does have a large constituency, and there are a lot of people who, and constituency within the legislature, and I think
a lot of fiscal policy people.
I think there are a lot of people who look at this and think that in the end, Ed Clear is on the right side of the issue.
He passed committee on a bipartisan vote.
And he's got bipartisan support. But I think it's going to come down to that ultimate negotiation. It's going to be up to the administration, and the trick is going to be convincing the administration that it needs to talk to the federal government to work this out.
And the administration thinks that it doesn't need legislation at all. It's on its own.
They don't want the legislation, is what it comes down to. But Representative Clear is right. I mean, it's not only 400,000 Hoosiers and billions of dollars, it's also tens of thousands of jobs for Indiana. It is crazy to turn it down, and the Healthy Indiana Plan as constituted would not work. Not only has it hasn't been successful as they talked about, are they going to actually put $1,100 into each one of those 400,000 people's savings accounts, health savings accounts? I don't think so. So, I mean, the whole premise of the Healthy Indiana.
Well, even if it did, the feds would never go for it.
They're not going to do it.
Back to the Senate budget, they left money in there for the potential of an expansion of some kind.
$200 million are put aside because they know they're going to have to deal with this in one way or another.
More than that, isn't it?
I thought it was 200
million. Million the first year, maybe four or five million.
I thought it was 200. No. Anyway, there is money in the budget for that. And what Ed's trying to do is make sure that the legislatures get inserted into this process. He and the governor are really not that far apart, at least that's what Ed tells me, that they all believe that this shouldn't be the existing program, that it should be some hybrid that the federal government agrees to, and he's insisting that they negotiate on that. So I think they're closer than people think they are.
Indiana House Speaker Brian Bosma is on the disabled list this week. Bosma developed an infection in a knee that he had replaced last summer, requiring immediate surgery on Tuesday. The speaker is recuperating and hopes to return to work at the State House late next week or early the following week. And Delaney, does his absence open the door to legislation that might otherwise have a lid put on it?
Well, you know, there's so much bad legislation going through there. It's kind of hard to quantify it. I just hope he gets well soon.
I mean,
that's
too,
pretty frightening. It's a pretty frightening thing to have happen. So.
But he's been playing an important role this year.
He's done a great job of leading a supermajority in the House. He has stayed in touch every day. He's watching the session on his computer. He's communicating with the desk constantly. So it's like
can
he's
you do this
there.
From home?
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
Pat Bauer tried.
Yeah. Well, he tried to vote for him.
Kevin Ware of the University of Louisville suffered a gruesome injury during an NCAA tournament game here in Indianapolis this week. Ware experienced a compound leg fracture in a game against Duke. He was emotional when talking about not only his injury, but the reaction from his teammates.
What was going through my head was either I'm going to cry and my team is going to be devastated and we probably won't win this game, or I'm going to just try to say some words that could get us through. And they beat Duke by 22, so I said I think my words got through good enough. You know?
Mike McDaniel, are there any lessons to be learned from Kevin Ware's
experience? This was a terrible injury. The lesson to be learned is determination. The whole time he kept challenging his team to go ahead and win the game while he's laying there with the bone sticking out of his leg. I mean, that's pretty heady stuff when you're sitting there doing that.
One lesson, though, it might be Indianapolis is a good place.
It's a good place to have it happen, that's for sure. And the one thing that worried me about this, I'm glad that Louisville's stepping up and paying the bill, but I think the NCAA ought to require schools to cover students in this situation. Heaven knows they make enough money off them. The other thing I thought was interesting is that he was so out of it, of course, after that, understandably, with medication, that he didn't remember that he'd received a phone call from Michelle Obama, and he was on TV on CNN asking her, would she please call back so they could talk to her now?
He also heard from the president, right? And
but
several
said,
of his...
he said it was more important to hear from Michelle Obama.
Good for
him. Because the president picked IU to win.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Cello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.